Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook at www.audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia, that's Mr. Media, and that's where you'll find more than 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. That's audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, right. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg. Novels have you ever read that actually upset you, frustrated you, left you unsure how you felt about the story itself? Well, that's the way I felt reading Dolan Perkins Velazquez's first novel, Wench. I read a lot of books. It kind of comes with the territory when they call you Mr. Media. But this novel left me aggravated. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, not at all. There's nothing wrong with a writer pulling a visceral reaction out of a reader. The subject matter is what did it to me. Wench is the story of four black slave women living in the mid-1800s, suffering whippings, beatings, rapes, and the outright sale of their children born of unions with white slave masters. It's pretty gruesome, hardcore content. It was not a pretty time, of course, and this is not a pretty book. So, it should make for an interesting conversation with the author. Dolan, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Good to have you here. This is some really powerful story. I kind of wondered, first of all, how you landed on this particular topic for your first novel.
Well, I found out about the resort. So I was reading a biography of W.E.B. Du Bois by David Levering Lewis called Biography of a Race, and I came upon a line in the book that said there was this resort hotel in Ohio in the 1850s that may have been the most unusual resort hotel in America because it was popular among slave owners and their enslaved mistresses. I was fascinated by this, and I began to research in the archives in Ohio and found that although I found records of the slaveholders present at the resort and the slave entourages, it was difficult to find the stories of the women who were there, and I was curious to know what it would have been like to be a woman, a slave woman, on vacation with your master in a free state after the passage of the Fugitive Slave Act in 1850 in Ohio. I was just very curious about this.
Excuse me a minute. I'm sorry, I'm kind of 102 fever and a bad cough, so I apologize. it's not the way I normally like to carry on, but it's a fascinating idea for a story, it seems like an incredibly brutal time. And would it be more brutal to take stories of these women back where they were in the Confederate States I was very upset. I mean, I'll be honest. I was very upset reading what was happening to your characters. And I know that they're just characters, but I still got upset.
Well, that was probably the greatest difficulty of the novel because on the one hand, I did not want to romanticize the period, right? I mean, there's just no way to write about slavery without writing about the difficulties that slaves endured. But at the same time, I was very careful that I didn't want the book to just be a catalog of atrocities. So I wanted to make sure that there was also a storyline there that the reader could stick with. So, sort of a balancing act. And so that's why part two of the novel, I go back to when Lizzie's master first takes her and she's 13 years old. And, she is maturing along with the relationship that he begins with her. So, it's a very difficult thing to write about slavery from any angle. I just sort of did my best because I felt that this was a story that needed to be told.
Are you finding much difference between your I'm sorry, between your black readers and your white readers?
You know, not at all. Most people who are writing me are saying that the novel really moved them, that, you know, people are early in the book, Lizzie, my main character, does something that betrays her fellow slaves, and all of my readers, white and black, are upset with Lizzie about that. And then, you know, so the sort of emotional roller coaster, I think anybody who reads the book is feeling the same exact thing. And then I originally thought that the book would be mainly appealing to female readers just because, you know, the main characters of the book are women. But during my book tour so far, lots of men are coming up to me saying, you know, hey, I really like this book, and, you know, it's not just a women's book. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen with the book when you put it out there into the world. But I'm finding that everybody is finding some way of entering. I had one white woman email me and say, I would have been an abolitionist if I had lived back then, you know, because she really identified with my character, Glory, who's a Quaker abolitionist. So I think everybody sort of finds their own way, but the similarity between the readers' experiences, I think, is transcending race because, you know, we as Americans, we all recognize that slavery was a brutal, extremely morally corrupt system, you know?
Well, certainly anyone who reads this, who maybe a Southerner who thought, you know, we should go back to that, you couldn't possibly read this and say, oh, yeah, that was a good way to live. I mean,
yeah.
It's just awful. What did you do? This is your first novel, and I know that you are Harvard educated. You come from a very strong background. But what did you do to earn a living before writing this book?
Well, I teach. So I've been teaching at the University of Puget Sound for the last 5 years. Before that, I was at the University of Mary Washington in Virginia. And so teaching has been my source of income, and it also has been my source of inspiration because my students are phenomenal, and they really inspire me in terms of their earnest effort. I've been fortunate to teach at small liberal arts colleges where I could really get to know my students, and I have to give them a shout out because they keep me intellectually stimulated. It's been great.
So you talk creative writing, I believe, right?
That's right.
I'm really sorry. Is it different? Or will it be different? The book's only been out a short time. Will it be different to go back to your classes having a novel in hand as opposed to being the teacher who's been working on a novel?
I think so. I'm getting a lot of emails from students who are congratulating me and who are connecting with me on social networking sites and things like that. And I think it makes a difference to students because they see you as having a sort of national reputation. Do I think it'll make it easier for me to teach? No, because teaching is a hard thing no matter how you cut it. But I do think it can help a little bit in terms of the students listening to you, to what you say. I hope. We'll see.
Now you mentioned the importance of research and just in terms of finding this topic. How much is based on research and how much is based on imagination?
Well, you know, I like to say that this book is inspired by history rather than straight historical fiction, yeah, because, I never found a record of women who, you know, wrote that they were sexually involved with their master. So that's a strong local oral history in the area. And so I had to fill in the gaps. If I had found more, I may have written a scholarly essay about this because I think it's a story that needs to be told. But one of the things that fiction allows me to do as a person who has, you know, both a scholarly background and a creative one, it allows me to fill in those gaps imaginatively and answer some of the questions that history, or at least written history, won't. And I suppose it must be, one of the things I learned, it must be very frustrating to be a historian, to be looking for something that you know is true, but you can't find it, and so you can't include it in your book, or if you do, it has to be in a speculative fashion. So one of the things that fiction does for me is it gives me license to at least begin to try to answer some of these questions.
The name of the book, of course, is Wench, and I'm talking to the author, Dolan Perkins Valdez. Tell me about, you start the book with a definition of wench. Why was that necessary, and you know, how do you define the word?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people may not know the history of the word, and, you know, when the word first enters in the Middle English, it has a very benign meaning, meaning a young girl, and then it evolves to mean something a little bit more derogatory. When we think of it in the English context, we think of it as a, you know, we might think of a tavern wench, for example. It means, you know, a lewd or lascivious woman or something like that. But it's only when the word enters U.S. usage that it becomes specifically attached to black women. And so if you had lived in the U.S. in the 1850s, for example, and someone referred to a wench, you wouldn't know that they were talking about a slave woman. And so I was really interested in renewing a discussion of that word, and particularly the ways in which the women of my book, although, you know, if you look at the cover of the book, for example, the title is wench, which is a word that has negative connotation. But the image, you know, is anything but what you think of when you think of the word wench. It's a woman in a very chaste white dress. And I liked the irony of that to suggest, for example, that this word had been attached to women in a rather, I think, undeserved fashion. And so I wanted to bring up that discussion to talk about images of black women during slavery that suggested that black women were in some way more sexual or something like that.
Well, it's definitely an ironic cover, considering the content. Yeah, I mean, you would look at the cover and think one thing, and then you start reading, and you go, oh, my God. Sorry, I just, you know, I was really discomforted by reading the book. It just, and as I said in the introduction, I'm not saying that as a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it takes a lot for, you know, a writer to upset a reader. You have to be doing something right to reach into someone to do that, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, it's a delicate balance because, you know, on the one hand you have the reader who will say, you know, they were upset, and the other one who says, well, you romanticized it. It was much worse than that. So the real challenge of anyone writing about any of these periods, whether it be slavery, whether it be the Holocaust, whether it be the Rwandan genocide, whatever horrible, traumatic past a writer writes about, there is that balance between beauty and truth, right? And so, I think that it is a discomforting book, but I also try to write about it in a poetic way so that at the very, very least, right, somebody would say, well, you know, it upset me, but the language was beautiful, you know, so... You know, I think it's a very, very delicate and difficult tightrope.
Have you actually had people tell you that you romanticized this?
I have had a couple of people say that, yes. And I.
What planet are they on?
Right, exactly. I wonder if they, brought that preconception. I think that they're, if you read the actual 19th century slave narratives published by slaves, they're a lot worse than my book. They are really much more a catalog of atrocities because they are meant to create abolitionists and to end the institution of slavery. So the whole idea behind the autobiographical slave narratives is to unsettle. That's the whole point of them, right? And so if you read those, they are atrocity after atrocity, beating after rape after beating after rape, you know, and horrible, horrible
right.
deaths and horrible, horrible, you know, oh, and, the children were sold away from the mother, et cetera. And, you know, if you go back to those, talking about, being unsettled, those will really unsettle you. And so I think if you compare Wench to original autobiographical slave narratives, it's in no way as difficult to read. And I think maybe for the people who felt that it was romanticized, they, you know, the way that I portray, for example, Lizzie's relationship with her owner, I portray it as a kind of seduction. And I think that there are some people who would say, no, it was a rape. You know what I mean? It was a rape. And I'm less interested in, you know, someone being tied down and raped against their will, and more interested in the psychological dynamic, the whole idea, you know, for example, Lizzie, my character, she's seduced by him just giving her a glass of cold water, right? Like him just bringing
right.
her water. It's very easy to do because slaves had so little. I mean, of course, she could have gone out and, you know, gotten the water from the well herself, but there's a way in which, you know, she doesn't have any parents, she doesn't have any siblings on the plantation, you know, she's an orphan, and he takes advantage of her desire to be loved. So, you know, I'm sort of interested in those kinds of nuances, whereas 19th century slave narratives are not, you know.
Hmm. Very hardcore, direct. Yeah, I mean, there's that slow build-up with Lizzie where, yeah, the glass of water and, excuse me, you know, it's gradual. Of course, he teaches her to read. And before we have to let you go, this book is off to a very good good start. Have you started on another book? Do you know what you're going to do next?
You know, I've been so busy promoting this book. Everybody told me before the book came out, make sure you get started on the second book, and of course I didn't listen. So I'm hoping that once things slow down a little bit, I'll be able to really get to work on something. Every time I try to drum up something, I have to get on a plane to go somewhere. So it's been difficult to get something going, but I think maybe once summer gets here, I'll be able to, you know, stick with something. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, folks, listen, you can find Dolan Perkins Valdez's new book, Wench, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com. You can also meet Dolan in person on tour through the end of March. Check out her personal website, www.dolenperkinsvaldez, that's all solid, one word, dolenperkinsvaldez.com for more details. And you can follow Dolan on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Dolen, D-O-L-E-N. Dolen, thank you so much for being on Mr. Media with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And folks, for more of your favorite novelists, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. Most shows do not have coughing in them. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Adriana Trigiani, Sarah Zarr, James Dashner, Richard Deutsch, Monty Schultz, Peter Gallenbach, John Darton, Sue Ann Jafarian, James Sheehan, and many more. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.